be a part of the show, text Bobby V on the UPS Jobs text line at 437-968.
The show continues on a We Want to Know Wednesday on ESPN 680-1057. Jeff Leitze Jr., Fabulous One, Phil Baker in the studio with me, Nick Valvano. We're in for Bobby V today. Very pleased to be joined by Eric Crawford of WDRB, who joins us right now at Eric Crawford on Twitter. Eric, you just wrote a nice piece about Dennis Lampley, the Trinity football legend, who sadly passes away today at 80 years old, you know, most known for his 50-game win streak. Did you have any interactions with the late Coach Lampley?
Only to have covered him a little bit. I know I covered one game, one or two Trinity games, but when I worked and covered high schools at the Courier Journal, I wasn't high enough on the totem pole to get Trinity games usually, but I know I covered maybe his 100th victory or something like that. You know, I just knew him in passing. But I knew him through so many people around town, either in the media or just in general, who played for him and or you knew him as a teacher. And I know the esteem that he's held in by so many people around the community whose lives he influenced. And that's in some ways as much of a compliment as the winning of games when you start to look at people, whether it's the Brom family or just various Trinity friends that I have, Jody Demling, Sean Frybert, people like that around town who are leaders in this community who were greatly influenced by him.
Eric Crawford joining us now. Yeah, Jeff Brom had a nice note about him on Twitter. He's meeting the media at 1:30. I'm sure he's going to talk about that a little bit. But, I mean, just like how pivotal was he in the legacy of Trinity, you know, establishing them as a football powerhouse?
Well, you know, it was. It had a reputation anyway, but it seemed like, you know, and he had three state championships as an assistant coach and then took over and won five in a row. And I remember, you know, that amazing 50-game winning streak, which is pretty much a 4 years without getting beat, which is, you know, that's not bad. It just seemed like they always won because they did always win. So I would say, if anything, he established that mystique of just total dominance, and which was around Trinity for a little while. And, you know, which it still holds on to in some ways today.
Eric Crawford joining us. Going to a little bit more of a macro storyline, I guess. Big 12 Media Day is going on right now. Commissioner Brett Yormark having some kind of chesty comments saying that their Big 12 is the deepest college football conference in the land, and also basically kind of taking a, I don't know if you want to say a veiled shot, but says that they're one of the top three conferences in the land. You got to think that includes the SEC and the Big Ten, but kind of shunning the ACC with those with those comments. Your thoughts on those?
Well, if you go by revenue, they're not number three yet, but they may be well on their way. Hard to tell, but he's got to say something. He's just lost Texas and Oklahoma. The ACC hasn't lost anybody yet, so I wouldn't, you know, I don't think much of it. I think he's just trying to kind of cast his league in the best spot he can cast it, and, you know, from a football on the field standpoint, we'll have to see. You know, maybe they are the deepest. They could be this year, but they're not the highest, and that, you know, the SEC and the Big Ten are up there. The ACC is fighting for respect, and the Big 12 post Texas and Oklahoma. While it's kind of an exciting league, and I like it, I like the league that they put together. But what the Big 12 is built on is basketball. They're built on being the best basketball conference in the country, which they are, and that's what I like about them. So I don't know how, you know, football is nice, but what he says and what actually is may not always dovetail.
What do you think is the overall health of the ACC?
I don't think it's great. I mean, you know, it can't be great when two of your top members are suing to get out. And I think we all just kind of feel like that's a matter of time before it happens. So I don't think it's great. I don't think the leadership has been particularly visionary. I don't think adding, you know, SMU and Stanford and Cal does a whole lot for them. It's kind of weird. So I don't think, frankly, I wouldn't give it a great bill of health. And yet, it is still around. It is still a power player. It is still, you know, I think you can still couch it as the number three league right now, basically in terms of history and all that other stuff. So, you know, they still have a spot at the table, but I don't feel great about it otherwise.
Eric Crawford, WDRB, here on the V Show. Be sure to give him a follow on Twitter, /X, at Eric Crawford. Piggybacking off that, what the storylines heading into the ACC and SEC media days over the course of the next 2 weeks, you know what the SEC is going to do. Greg Sankey's going to be big, boastful, just doing what he does at those, holding court there. But it just feels like Jim Phillips is in a situation where he gets picked apart on everything he says. That even if there is some positive things happening in the ACC just because of the revenue gap, as you've alluded to, is there anything he can say or do at these media days to instill any sort of confidence to members of the ACC outside of, I guess, Clemson and Florida State, because they're going to do their own thing?
I don't know that there's a whole lot, to be honest with you. Just given the juncture where they are, they're not in a position where they can change a lot with their TV deal as it is. They've not really seized upon opportunities, I think, to be more creative. I think they need to be playing more weeknight games. I think they should already be positioning to do more creative things to distinguish themselves from the SEC and the Big Ten, but they're not. So, and if you're not going to do that, what else is there? So, I don't think there's a whole lot that he's going to be able to say at this point to really generate a lot of excitement around the league, beyond the fact that most of the questions are going to be about, you know, Clemson wants out, Florida State wants out. Even North Carolina has discussed getting out at the trustee level. And, you know, if North Carolina wants out, it's over, because it's all about North Carolina. Every championship, you could pull a rock from Chapel Hill and probably hit it at some point, so the whole league is based there. So I don't know. I think there are problems. I don't think they're going away, and I don't know if there's a whole lot he can say at this point to change them. This isn't the time. A year or two ago might have been the time.
Yeah, you alluded to the you alluded to the Big 12 media days, and I know our colleagues Ethan Moore and company over at Louisville Sports Live had David Teal from the Richmond Times on talking about the naming rights, selling the conference name, some ways to get creative around that. Do you think there's a scenario in which they could be doing that behind the scenes to try to get creative and bring in more revenue?
Well, they should, but I don't know if they will, because they kind of view themselves. I don't know how they view themselves. They view themselves above that or not. And what is your sponsor? Do you have somebody interested that would do that? Beyond that, if you're, you know, if it's a private venture capital type situation, you know, they're investing to get a return. So, you know, you can get a bunch of money up front, but at some point you're having to pay them. So it's not, while it may be a solution, I just don't know, A, how much anybody's going to pay for the naming rights to the ACC, which they might. And B, how much you actually realize when you consider that you've got to return that investment. I don't think it's being done just in a one-way situation. But every deal is different. You have to look at each deal.
Eric Crawford, WDRB, at Eric Crawford on Twitter, joining us right now. Bring it back to the 502. Jeff Brown meeting the media earlier this week. Some of the major storylines that came out of that was MJ Griffin, Renato Brown healthy, Pierce Clarkson, the clear number two. What do you think is the biggest story to take away from Brom's presser earlier in the week?
Well, there wasn't any blockbuster, really, you know, from the press conference. It was just an update. And I think, you know, I guess Pierce Clarkson right now being number two, but I wouldn't, you know, I don't know how much I put into that. I think he is number two. But what does that mean? Does it mean he gets a series each half? Does it mean he's just there if Tyler Shook gets hurt, or, you know, what does it mean? That remains to be seen. And you mentioned Renato Foster. The more I look at it, and I was hoping to get to talk to him some point this summer and do a story, that injury to him before the Pittsburgh game was really big. You know, he got hurt during warm-ups, a freak thing before the Pittsburgh game. They go out and lose that game and have to shore up the offensive line. But I don't know that the offensive line was ever quite the same without him. And, not that they didn't have other pieces to put in there, but but I think they had to do a lot of moving around and a lot of changing. And I think that was something, you know, for a team that wasn't that deep in a coach's first season, to lose somebody like that was big. As well as the defense did, replacing MJ Griffin, I think the offense, you know, you lose him, you lose your running back, you lose Jamari Thrash at wide receiver. It kind of, that game at Pittsburgh was the beginning of a lot of injuries that led to a lot less effective offense for Louisville. And you know, you start to realize just what that season could have been. And it was already really good, but just give them any two of those three weapons back and it might be a different story.
You alluded to some other storylines that I think are interesting. Our friend and softball teammate Matt McGavick actually wrote a good piece looking at some of the storylines of UofL football and the question marks going in to the season. I mean, the offensive line, the depth on the defensive side of the trenches, you know, how they replaced Jamari Thrash. I mean, to you, what's the biggest position group question mark going into the season?
Biggest position group question mark? I think it's wideout. I think there's some good names there that didn't have to be the guy last year. He's brought in some really big names. I think that's a big part of it, because the one thing that they did not have last year, I mean, they had it some games where they could get the protection right, but they just, what Brohm really wants to develop is a deep passing game. He wants a vertical game. Not a mid-level. He wants to go have that threat of going deep. And a big part of that is receivers who can do that. And I think Thrash was comfortable in that role. I don't know how many of the other guys were really, really good with that role, but they need some guys at the wideout spot that could do that this year. So I would probably say that I'm watching them as much as anybody.
Now, I mean, it's one of the major question marks, and I don't want to say question marks, but just something that everyone's going to be worried about. But the importance of Tyler Shuck's health, just your thoughts on that. Like, how nervous are you going to be when he takes the first sack of the season?
Well, I think everybody's going to be that way all year, you know, and that's why you got guys. That's why I question who there might be, like a number two guy in terms of a one game fill in. But if it's in terms of rest of the season fill-in, it might be somebody else. It might be Brady Allen. It might be a kid from Tennessee, the transfer from Tennessee, Bailey.
Harrison Bailey,
You know, it depending on what the situation is, I think is where the backup comes from. But obviously you want to make sure that Shuck is healthy all season. And I think that, you know, their plan is to play him that way. Their package is to do that, to be able to protect him. He's not going to be asked to run the ball a lot. You know, so they feel like that they at least have a plan in place that can keep him upright and healthy.
Eric Crawford, appreciate the time as always, my friend. Did you have any – you were kind of lukewarm in your enthusiasm about the 4th of July when we had you on last Wednesday, but did you escape the 4th of July with all your digits? Everything good?
I don't set them off. It's just funny. Every year it lasts longer. You know, it goes like the 9th, 10th, and 11th. So I think they're just about done shooting them off in my neighborhood right now.
There you go. Well, Eric, we appreciate the time, my friend. All right. Have a good week.
Thanks. Bye.
Eric Crawford of WDRB, at Eric Crawford on Twitter if you want to give him a follow. Boys, we got a barn burner here.
Yeah, I saw you locked in. You look like Diener over there on the he's just pacing on the back. He's got a shekel or two over there, but you were locked in during that interview. I appreciate that. That was journalism personified.
Oh, yeah, I asked him a quick question real quick back there, and he was like, I don't know. And just like,
dude, Diener? Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, this is just, Jack Grossman's here.
Is it Wentz? Wait,
is it Wentz? I'm pretty so.
Wait, why is Jack here? And how come he didn't text me?
Well,
because, I'm a little hurt.
Because James Black and I yesterday, he was calling. Anna's out, I guess, because of a wedding, and
yeah,
he
right,
was trying
right.
to, you know, get some new voices on and everything. And Blank was, you know, going to be poolside. Blank didn't care. Blank is like, I'll join the show for the round table if need be. And apparently, he's like, man, he's like, Jack says he like wanted to, you know, possibly, you know, do some hits occasionally from Atlanta and everything. So he reached out and was like, I would, but I'm boarding a plane in Atlanta to head to London. And then he's in freaking
and now
Wimbledon.
He's in Louisville?
No, he's in Wimbledon.
Oh, he's in Wimbledon. Oh, that's what you were talking about.
Yes.
I thought when you said he's here.
No, he's there, I should say. He's not there. Here.
My bad. I didn't know he's at Wimbledon.
He pops in every time there's, you know, free food here because of, like, he loves seeing everybody. Jack Grossman. But yeah, he is in Wimbledon
right now.
I was
going to say, it's like, wait, like, Jack's like right
I think
around,
he tweeted
right
something about it, too.
He's at Wimbledon. Can you just see him all decked out and
all white?
And all white. Yeah. What's the cocktail they all drink out there?
This is freaking awesome. So he said, where you can't bring hot food to your seats, but you can bring a bottle of wine per person into the grounds. And then he's there.
That's awesome. Jack Grossman at Wimbledon. That was not on my bingo card today. That's pretty impressive. I could just see him all decked out, all white, looking classy as hell. I can't remember what the cocktail is over there. What do they drink in Wimbledon?
Not sure.
Because he is very much, I love my boy Jack, but he has
tea and crumpets.
He has the alcohol facilities of like a
19-year-old woo girl.
Yeah.
No, but like one of the thirsty peddlers in Nashville for a bachelorette party. That's what Jack drinks.
No, he seriously. Like,
my cousin's like that. It's so funny. It is like street watching a grown man like that. Come on, bro. Yeah. Get like. Grow up is what I want to say.
I'd be like, you don't got to go like zero to like have a frothy beer like of some meat or something like that. But
no,
this
he
man,
likes what he likes.
It's like pink lemonade, like vodka.
No, seriously, that's it.
Oh,
that's
Pink Whitney's?
No, he probably yeah. probably would love a Pink Whitney.
So Strebel and I walked over to one of those. It was probably like a Thursday night game.
Canadians outside. Seriously, they got Canadian flags on their jerseys. I don't know what that's all about. Oh my god!
Anyways, we made the walk over to Cardinal Stadium one time. Me, Strebel, and Jack Grossman, and he had like a 2-liter. That he mixed of like the pink like Minute Maid lemonade with like his drink.
Oh, and he got rowdy.
Oh yeah, day. it was a long. I was like, Jack, this is a long walk, buddy. Like
he mazel toffed like at the tailgate. Like I think
moderation,
my friend. He threw down like a bottle and shattered it everywhere, and got mad at him. Yeah, like he got. And look, I mean, I've gotten rowdy too. I'm not one to cast aspersions, but no, he like Jack was from what I heard was he was deep into the Manischewitz wine. He was feeling it.
So hopefully he's enjoying himself over there.
Hey. Well, that's very.
If you're in London, you better live it up.
Absolutely. That's one of the cities. Have you guys ever been?
No.
Pops raves about London.
I haven't been
said
much outside
New York,
the US.
But cleaner. Like that's what like he
I
said.
I could see that.
It's got that vibe. Like it's a cleaner New York. It's a big happening spot, but. Yeah, have you ever been out of the
I
U.S.?
Just Canada and Mexico is.
Yeah, I went to
I've
Cancun.
I've never been to either one.
I went to Cancun?
I went that's
to Cancun,
cool.
And then I did a cruise when we stopped in Jamaica. So
okay, nice.
That's about
did you
it,
see though. Any Kentucky fans there?
No, I didn't.
Both
not.
Places I saw massive amounts of
that
Kentucky
is actually
fans.
Actually hilarious.
Yeah.
No, in Mexico and Canada?
Yeah.
No, I didn't see any U.K. fans.
Like Drew always says, he's like, you could, like, because you could be at a funeral. Kentucky shirt. You could be at a bar mitzvah.
No, this is very true. I've went to Disney World and seen Kentucky shirts there, like in the middle of January or whatever it was. Like, okay, that's weird, but whatever. Yeah, so no.
Yeah, it's a game I play where it's like, will I see a Kentucky fan here? And it hasn't disappointed. Every city.
Now
every,
I'm tapped in.
Oh,
now
yeah. It's a fun game.
We had like randomly UK fans at my high school.
Yeah.
And I remember when I announced, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go to University of Louisville. They came out of the woodworks.
Give you an L's down and just.
Oh, yeah, they suck. And I was like, who are you guys?
We live in Connecticut, bro. Like,
let's roll skis. Come on, guys. I thought we were on the same page, but yeah, no.
The drink is called a Pimm's Cup. That's right. The Pimm's Cup. We actually have one at Lulu. It's like Pimm's is like an aperitif or whatever, and I don't know what else is in it. Let's see, it's We Want to Know Wednesday. What's in a Pimm's Cup? Let's look at it. I know it has like cucumber and strawberry, stuff like that. Let's see here. Real fast before we take a bottom of that break and we get Jeff Brahm on. 2 ounces Pimm's number one, 1/2 ounce lemon juice, freshly squeezed. Ginger ale to top it, garnish with a cucumber slice, garnish with a mint sprig, and garnish with strawberry.
Mm.
There you go. So it's a very. I feel like. I don't know. I feel like I could see Jack drinking that. Maybe.
What's the hard liquor in there?
It's Pimm's. It's Pimm's number one.
Yeah, I think you
could
try that.
I need to know what Pimm's is. Like, but it looks nice. It's a
Pimm's
cute looking drink.
What is Pimm's? Pimm's number one.
It looks like a drink he would drink, but yeah. I don't know the taste of it that would scare him away.
It's a liqueur.
Oh, okay. Then yeah.
Made in England from dry gin, liqueur, fruit juices, and spices.
That's a liqueur. Gin scares me a little bit.
Gin, but it's a liqueur though, so it's not. It's
it has
not
a distinct
hard
flavor.
Again,
it's,
you gotta have it, it. You gotta have the out of body experience. You're looking at Jack Grossman, but you need to think like a 19-year-old girl
yeah,
in college,
I take it back. I don't
sorority
think
chick
it.
That well, it's, you know, some like
he's
smeared off.
He's asking for vodka lemonade.
Yeah,
like, let's be honest. He's asking for a vodka lemonade. I could, yeah, he's double fisting vodka lemonade. Lemonades right now in his
you see
his
Hodor from Game of Thrones, but you need to think like one of the thirsty peddler, you know, woo girls
yeah,
in Nashville.
Yeah, like yeah. You see Hodor, you got to think Chloe.
Yeah,
like what would Chloe be drinking right now? That's
so
Jack Grossman.
So you said a break. We got
yeah
take
break.
A
we got Brom coming up. Yeah, so we'll take a bottom of the hour break, and we got Brom meeting the media coming up next. So it's the V Show. It's ESPN 680-105.7.
Value Market is Louisville's grocer. Since 1978, Value Market has been your neighborhood grocery store for all of life's best moments. Value Market gets it. Life is busy. That's why Value Market has curbside and delivery since 2013, freeing up more of your time for the more important things in life. Kids' ball games, family visits, work, tailgating, and cookouts. Value Market gets it. That's why Value Market has four area locations to serve your grocery needs. Mid-City Mall, Outer Loop Plaza, Aircoy Manor, and Mount Washington. At Value Market, you got savings in the bag. ValueMarket.com.
Tired of jumping from job to job? How about a career in a recession-proof industry where you can make a difference and help create a healthier living and working environment? The pest management industry gives you the opportunity to work with more independence. OPC Pest Services will give you a chance to grow with advancement. Come be a part of our team at OPC Pest Services. Apply online at opcpest.com/careers. That's opcpest.com/careers.
Where do you go to find all your favorite wine, beer, and spirits with selections customized to local tastes? For over 25 years, that go-to place has been Cox's Spirit Shop. Cox's, Louisville's go-to liquor store.
Be a part of the show. Text Bobby V on the UPS Jobs text line at 437-9680.
Lorenzo Mazzetti up 3-0 on Fritz from the U.S. In the fifth set here at Wimbledon. Jack Grossman probably enjoying his vodka lemonades and watching this this event. Very jealous that he's out there, but very cool that he is.
It is cool.
Yeah, that I mean, that's cool. That's an event. It's not on my like number one you know list of like top five like sports bucket list, but it'd be up there. It'd be up there maybe in the second tier or third tier or something. Yeah. I mean that'd be cool to see.
If especially
like that.
If it's like just knowing that somebody's there that you know, it's like, oh okay. Yeah. Now it makes it even cooler. Yeah, like you ever do that, it's like, oh man, like I never thought about going there, but now that I know you're there and you're living it up, it's like, dang, I gotta get out there at some point.
Yeah, it's a good point. If there was a tennis event I'd like to go to, it would probably be the US Open just
US Open, because
the stars really come out and Arthur Ashe is a cool stadium. It'd be fun to go to Wimbledon. I don't wanna after Novak, you know, yelled at the fans and everything like that, I want to make sure I was following the right etiquette. That's the only thing I'd be a little nervous about. I don't want to do anything that's a faux pas, you know, for the Brits. I don't want to come off as a stupid American, you know, something along those lines. But we are efforting Jeff Brom. We have the feeds up. All right, we got visual on it. We're just waiting for him to come to the podium. All right, cool stuff there. 437-9680, UPS Jobs text line. Hello, ladies. This text line remembers the infamous Jack Grossman soundbite. That's pretty good. Another one complimenting our interview with EC. Thank you very much for the kind words. This texter says, as a bartender, you get a call for Pimm's.
Hello, ladies.
There you go. You get a call for Pimm's one out of a million times. It's weird he says that because maybe like this is the first restaurant I've worked in that had a Pimm's cup. We're like New Orleans themed.
Exactly. So that makes sense.
So I don't know if it's like a New Orleans centric cocktail. I'm not sure, but I've noticed it on our menu, and then the bar in Jeffersonville, the Alcove.
Okay.
Had a Pimm's Cup special. So I don't know if it's like becoming a new in vogue
one
popular
in one
cocktail.
Million. It sounds like it's no, still yeah, not very
I never,
popular.
I had yeah, never, never heard of it. I had never now. Heard of it until I worked at Lulu downtown.
And like then the, you noticed it when you went
yeah,
to the Alcove?
Yeah, maybe okay. Yeah. Maybe it's one of those gotcha. Things you don't know it and then you notice it.
Yeah, because I've been to Lulu before and yeah. I didn't notice it then. I still noticed it, and now that you say it, now when I see it, I'm like, oh, I know, like, you know, you see that I had like you buy a car, and then like I never seen a Chevy Cruze before.
Yeah, and then you go start out noticing and them.
Chevy Cruze everywhere. It's
yeah,
like,
I forgot
oh,
what that. That's a phenomenon.
It's, yeah, it's called something. It is a word for it.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what it's called, but yeah, it's I've started to see more Pimm's cups. I don't think I've ever actually tried Pimm's, so I don't know exactly what the flavor is. I like
that
gin.
That sound though. Bad though. I'm not a big huge gin person because one time in college, just that's enough.
No, like, yeah, no everyone
one
has
time,
that liquor.
College.
Yeah.
Bombay is crazy.
Yeah, no, that'll do it to you. All right, Jeff Braun, Media and the Media, will go out to it live.
What comes to mind when you think about Dennis Lampley?
Well, I think Dennis Lampley meant a lot to a whole lot of people and touched a lot of people's lives and really set the standard for coaching. And I was fortunate enough to get a chance to play for him as well as along a lot of other people that really taught us, you know, how to treat people, how to motivate people, how to coach them the right way. And while knowledge and X's and O's is very important, it's also about treating people right and letting them know you love them, letting them know you care about them. And when you do that, you get the most out of them. And I just think he set the standard and achieved a lot of great things at a tremendous high school. Loved his time there as a coach, a teacher, even after as an athletic director, and was just always had his arms open for people that were coming back as well, that had played for him and that had been coached by him. And I think everybody cherishes those memories and all the things that he taught them.
How do you begin to quantify, maybe not even just what he meant to Trinity High School, but to just football culture around Louisville?
Well, he achieved a great deal and obviously did it with a lot of help from other assistant coaches and a whole staff of people, but he brought people together. He knew how to relate to not only coaches but players and parents, and understood the importance of taking young men in under his care, bringing them up the right way, teaching them more about the game of football, but about how to be successful in life and how to treat people, and was always there for him. I just think he used that. Those characteristics that he had to help develop championship programs and build a tremendous program, powerhouse across the country, to a lot of wins, a lot of championships, a lot of victories. And then even, after his coaching days as an athletic director, knew how to hire the right people and how to, continue to build that brand and that program, and just did a great job with it.
Just as far as motivating and a motivating factor for you to become a head coach, what ways did he motivate you and what did you learn from him that maybe allowed you to navigate your way to become a head coach today?
I was fortunate enough to be able to play the game for a while at all levels, and because of that was around a lot of great coaches, a lot of great players, a lot of tremendous teams. And as you experience that, you come to realize, how good you had it when you were in high school and how much those things really meant to you. And I think, you tie all the great coaches and people out there across the country at all levels, which there's a ton of them, really when young men are at the age of, 14 to 18, it's an impactful part of their life, time of their life. He grabbed a hold of that and did the best that I've ever seen at it as far as being able to relate to all different personalities and backgrounds, and was able to build a championship culture just by being a great person with great morals and values that stood for the right things. And all players really learned from him when they played for him, and then even more so even after, when he came back and you realize after being around other teams, other coaches, and other professions, how valuable that time was.
I can't remember what part you're there with that 50-game streak. Were you there 2 years of that 50 or one?
I think I was there at the beginning. And
was there a message, though, that kept everybody grounded, I guess, is what I was kind of getting at?
Well, I think, he not only could motivate guys to play at a high level, but he brought people together. He was able to, in those days recruit, so to speak, just by word of mouth and by people realizing that there was a good thing going on with him as the coach there. And, you know, he was able to take young men of all different talents from different backgrounds and mold them together. And back then, to get that 50-game streak was not as common maybe as it could be today. But he did it, and he did it with great flair and great personality. And I just think him being a great coach and then carrying that over to the athletic director role and then carrying that over into a father figure role, not only for us as players, but even his family, his wife, his son and daughter, his grandkids. He was always just in great spirits, had a great personality, and welcomed everyone back with open arms.
Jeff, you took a moment during your introductory news conference to point out Coach Lampley's impact on you, and you got to share that with him. What did that mean to you?
It meant a great deal. You know, Coach Lampley had been suffering with Alzheimer's for a while, and even at that stage, you know, he was suffering with it quite a bit. So to get him out of the house and into the press conference was great, and I appreciated that and his family doing that for me and for all of us. So it was great to see him, and even though maybe he couldn't recall all of it, I think he did recall some of it. And, you know, he's always been a big part of our football background. You know, he came to bowl games when we were at Purdue, and we played the Nashville City Bowl, Music City Bowl, and came to practices there. And, you know, even our last year there, we beat Tennessee, which is his home state and his team. And he was there, you know, rooting us on, and it meant a lot. So I just think that, you know, as he got older and as we get older and wiser and more mature, you realize those special relationships don't happen all the time, and you cherish them. So I just think all players and students who had the opportunity to be around Coach Lampley vividly remember a lot of good times and a lot of good memories, and really, you know, really don't have anything bad to say at all because he was just such a great person.
Do you have any core memories of your time with him that come back to mind at first?
Well, I think when it comes to memories, like we talked about, you know, setting the getting the 50-game winning streak going and playing for him in close games. We went to Boone County in the semifinals and found a way to win that in an overtime fashion. And it's a wet, slippery field, even though it hadn't rained for a couple of days, so I don't know if they wetted the field for the game. But we found a way to win that. And then going in the state championship game and you know, shutting out Manuel, and that was a great victory for us. But I just think, you know, he brought together a lot of great people. And did it in a way that you liked and loved playing football, and you loved competing, you loved coming to practice, and you loved the competition. And I just think that is more rare than you think. You know, when you genuinely see the good in somebody and you notice it, and you know there's nothing fake about it, it means that more to you. So I just think he was able to do that to a huge nucleus of people, and they all appreciate it, and they remember those good times.
Being the winner that he was on the field, I'm sure throughout the years you took away some X's and O's things from him, but what were some of the takeaways that maybe you still have to this day about just building up people, teaching young people, and, you know, establishing culture that he'd like to do?
Without question, Coach Lampley taught me a lot, and my brother a lot, and our family a lot, and really all the players that he coached, because he did. He was able to motivate you. He was able to push you to be your best, but in a way that, you know, it wasn't cumbersome. It was something that you wanted to do. It was something that you set goals out, and he helped you achieve them. And as you coach young men now, you realize, and even as a former player at a lot of different teams and levels and a former assistant coach, you know, there's a lot of good that happens, and there's some things, I don't know if I really want to do it that way. And I think when you look back and you think of our time with Coach Lampley, man, there was a lot you could pick from there about how to treat people and how to get them to be their best and how to do it in a way that was enjoyable. Because really, you know, when it comes down to it, football's a game. You want to have fun with it, and he made it fun. But at the same time, he knew that winning was even more fun than not, and he knew how to motivate you to want to be your best. And I just think all those small things, you kind of have to be there and experience it to really feel it. But as you look back now, it was a constant atmosphere of that environment where, you know, all the young men he coached enjoyed playing for him.
When you get an edge as a coach, where was his edge? Like, what was innovative about him?
Well, I think that was the main thing that was innovative, is that it came from Coach Slamon just being a great person. Could build relationships, could talk to anybody. And I just think coaching, while X's and O's and plays and all those things are important, everybody needs to know they're cared for. They need to know that somebody's got their back. And I think when you know that, people can come together much better, much faster, and you can accomplish much more. So, you know, you have to have a combination of both. But at the same time, sometimes what can be lacking in some really good teams is the relationship building and the bonding that you have, and that you know that, you know, that player, but definitely that coach, is going to be there for you, really, whether you win or lose. And he's going to be there with you and ride with you all the way to the end. And I think that's what he was able to do naturally, but just by being himself.
When you first ventured into coaching, how much did you really get to talk with him and maybe pick his brain about some stuff on what you wanted to accomplish as a head coach? And maybe what was some of the early advice he gave you on that still sticks with you to this day?
Well, I think what Coach Lampley did for me is, he was a phone call away when I needed him. And not that I reached out all the time, but when I needed him. He was definitely somebody when I was either playing out of town or coaching not here in this city. When he came back, because we always kept a home here, he always tried to stop by and see Coach at his office. And he was always available for you. He was always, no matter what his schedule was, whenever you dropped by, he was going to spend some quality time with you. And you not only reminisce on the past, but talk about the future. And I just think he had wisdom. He had wisdom that was valuable because it was real. He had wisdom because he'd been there and done that. He had a relationship with myself and basically all of his players, and I'm sure they reached out to him numerous times as well. And I just think when you have that, and you have somebody that you know where he's located, not only just where his house is, but where he works, and you know that he's accessible at all times, it can really be a valuable tool to navigating through your own life. So I just think that stop I tried to make at least once a year when I was in town.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it, fellas. Thank you. Have a good day. Thank you.
Jeff Brohm. There you have it. Jeff Brohm meeting the media, talking a little bit about the passing of his former coach, Dennis Lampley, the great former Trinity head coach. Very kind words there. Our own Jeroen Diener was among the media out there. So,
Drew all in the mix.
He got
some questions in, didn't he?
Well, he's a Trinity guy. So that makes sense.
It makes sense. Yeah.
Or no, he's a St. X guy. That's right. Or is he?
I don't know.
I always forget.
I know his son goes to one and he went to the opposite.
Yeah, I know. Right. Yeah, that's the thing.
Did Diener's guy win? I don't know.
No, Diener's guy won. Lorenzo Massetti moving on. Yeah. So
if Max goes to Trinity, Diener went to St. X.
Yeah.
Or if Max goes to St. X, Diener went to Trinity. Yeah, I don't know which one it is.
I can't remember. I think Max goes to Trinity.
Okay.
And Diener goes to St. X. If he's listening right now, he is going to be so pissed off. Like, because I'm completely spacing right now on it. But yeah, I know it's both the Diener boys went to, they have their bases covered.
Yeah.
With the great Catholic.
But he's a Holy Cross guy now anyway, so it doesn't even matter.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. But very kind words there from Jeff Brohm. That was good stuff. So just a couple of things to get to. We have Russ Smith joining us in about 15 minutes. I'm looking down at the clock. Diener is St. X, a texter says. Max is Trinity. Okay, gotcha. That's what I thought. Yeah, but I was not positive, and I did not want to get that wrong.
Yeah, I didn't
because
know.
it's one of those things you don't want to. You don't want to do. But no, Dennis Lampley, a legend, 50-game winning streak. That was pretty historic stuff. Pretty historic stuff there. So kind words from one Jeff Brohm. I guess we might as well take a break. I mean, get a good reset here, and then we'll go to the top of the hour. And then Russ Smith scheduled to join us in studio. So it's the V Show. It's ESPN 680. It's 105.7.
What's up? What?
Break.
Oh, yeah, sure. No, I was sorry. Phil was connecting to Lucy.
Oh, I was going to say.
So I was in a conversation with him.
I was
going
to say,
you,
so why are you looking at me funny? I was like,
and then,
I
you, and then I looked up to you and
no,
I was
no
like,
no worries,
what?
No worries.
What happened?
We're producing on the air. That was very V-show-esque. Very V-show-esque. We're testing a connection on the air. You were talking to Phil. Yeah. I was throwing a break. I am very sorry. I didn't know
so
that was
I
going on.
Anything you just said to me was just...
You didn't hear any
was just
it.
Phil. Was in my
yeah,
ear.
I was going to say. I was like, yeah, we'll take a commercial. You
let's
continue.
Try it again.
Yeah, we'll try it again.
Take two.
It's,
there we
it's
go.
It's the V-Show. It's We Want to Know Wednesday. Jeff Lightsey Jr., Nick Valvano in for Bobby V. Go ahead and test that connection. We'll take a break. Yeah, it's ESPN 680, 105.7.